Thanks a lot for the invitation and for the organizations of this very nice conference. So my last name is pronounced Mulevičius, but don't try that. I come from Vilnius in Lithuania, and I'll talk about a joint work in progress, not published yet, conducted together with Nils Karkvil from University of Vienna and Lukas Müller from PI right here. So the title is Douglas Reuter TQFT as Generalized Orbifolds. I tried to give this talk before, and there are basically two parts of it, the Douglas Reuter TQFT and Generalized Orbifolds. They are both rather heavy on prerequisites, so I will actually talk somewhat little about the Douglas Reuter part, but I will mention what they are. So let's start with the talk then. So here is a very rough, brief plan of the talk. I'll spend some time on very general things. A tool that I will use a lot called defect TQFTs. In one way or another, we've seen already examples of them or what they are. I'll also talk about generalized orbifolds, and even though the name might sound somewhat involved, this is actually something that I think most of you have seen in one or another context, perhaps under a different name. I'll talk about state sum constructions, and this is where the Douglas Reuter come in. So the state sum constructions will be those for TQFTs in various dimensions up to four, and exactly the four-dimensional one is following the paper by Douglas and Reuter on state sum invariance of four manifolds. And then I'll talk about some implications of this work. So let's start. So I'll always use the QFT were in the functorial sense. So a defect TQFT for me is a symmetric monoidal functor from the source category of Bordisms, but as these extra letters suggest, they will be somewhat special. They are stratified Bordisms with labeled strata. So stratified basically means that I have my, say, n-dimensional Bordism, and it's also subdivided into subregions of various dimensions. So here is an example of a three-dimensional stratified Bordism with the underlying topology of the cylinder of the two torus. So you see there are these regions, extra regions, that are sort of floating inside of it, which might be interesting, and they also carry labels, and the labels are all accumulated in this datum here called the defect datum. I will explain a little bit more what that is precisely, but that's what a defect TQFT is. One thing that I should emphasize, it is as a functor, it's a functor between one category, so I'm not talking about something extended, and this might resolve some of the problems with gluing that I think we've heard about yesterday. So as long as corners are not involved, I think there is a framework which is more or less good. Any questions on that? good. So now a defect datum is, as I mentioned, what it does, it simply collects all the labels for all the strata, for all the defects, into these sets. For example, dn for the n-dimensional strata or bulk theories, and dn minus 1 for the codimension 1 defects, and so on and so on. It also encodes defects can be adjacent to other defects. So for example, imagine, I don't know, two lines intersecting at a point defect. So the label for that point defect might depend on the labels of the line defects that are adjacent to that point. So here is an example that you could extract from an N category. So an N category could be thought of as giving a defect datum. And I emphasize a defect datum, not a defect TQFT, just a labeling convention. So if N is 1, It's just a category. So category has objects and morphisms. And if I draw morphisms as divide as points on these lines, which are labeled by objects, this is exactly the datum that I need. So the objects would label the lines and morphisms the points. If I have the a two category, well, two category has this very nice graphical calculus, which is somewhat similar to this one, but everything is two-dimensional. So now I have regions labeled by objects in the category. I have lines, which are labeled by one morphisms of the two category, and I have points labeled by two morphisms. And basically, how a two morphism, what's the source, what's the target that basically encodes the adjacency of this would be defect. For n equals 3, you can also do this, and then you also have a graphical calculus or in three dimensions, which is very pretty, actually, which is sort of this three-dimensional picture is to this as to what this is to that. So if you read it, you would have regions labeled by objects, in this case, three category, and the planes by one morphisms in the three category, lines by two morphisms and points by three morphisms. And if you accumulate all that, in principle, you could get a defect datum. So this all very nice graphical calculus is laid out in the paper by Barrett, Moisburger, and Schaumann. And at least this is the only way I am capable of understanding three categories. One could think how to continue on, but for me, at least four categories already something beyond my competence. Good. So now if, on the other hand, if I have the TQFT, previous slide was where I don't have a TQFT, but if I have a defect TQFT, from it I can also extract a higher category. In a very similar manner, I would accumulate objects to be exactly the bulk theory, so the labels for the n-dimensional defects, and then one morphisms would be domain walls between the bulk theory, so codimension one defects, and so on and so on. And what's interesting that in this construction you actually need to use the fact that you have this defect TQFT, because you need that for n morphisms. You need to compose them somehow. So, for example, here is an example of composition of two morphisms in two dimension. What I wrote here is a defect Bordism. If I apply TQFT to it, I get a linear map from the vector spaces assigned to this stratified circle times to this stratified circle to the one on the outside boundary, and I get such a linear map. This is how composition in my higher category is defined. So if I'm not mistaken, so I try to track down the origins of this idea, and I find a paper by Kapustin, which very, I think it had very similar title to the title of the slide. For the particular, for the three-dimensional case, there is a detailed paper by Karkil, Moisburger, and Schaumann, which lays out all of this. So just for sanity check also, I would like to emphasize that now I have this higher category that I can extract from a defect TQFT, and I can build an orbifold datum out of that, but out of that higher category, but they need not not orbifold defect datum, but they need not coincide. For example, I can have something very trivial like a defect TQFT which just forgets all the defects, and then this higher category is sort of trivial. Then if I loop these constructions around, I get something boring. Good. So once we have defect TQFTs, one might start thinking about, well, how to make everything more general, more complicated, and confuse ourselves. So here is one confusion. So if I have already a readily available defect TQFT, I can define a slightly spicier defect TQFT, which is the so-called Euler completion. It's something very simple indeed. So I relabel now, I define the new labels to be pairs consisting out of the old label and a point defect in the old theory. And the definition is that I just, upon evaluation, I insert this extra point defect here, or as many such point defects as the symmetric Euler characteristic of the corresponding stratum, as I call it, dictates. Then they behave nicely under gluing, and I have this slightly spicier DQFT, which is sometimes useful. For example, I will soon talk about something like Turayev-Viro models, and there, if you ever seen the definition, there are various factors in the definition of the invariant, like dimensions and so on, and this idea basically helps to encode them. So this is the introduction on defect DQFTs. Are there any questions, maybe? Good. I will give some simple examples very soon of that. Good. So now, these are these things that I will call orbifold data. Right, so this you might want to follow closely because you will recognize it in whatever name that you are used to name this. So if I have already a defect datum, what I call a candidate orbifold datum will just be labels for certain defects. So one label for the n-dimensional defect, one bulk theory, and one would be for the one domain wall, and so on, until I have point labels. For point labels, I have two labels. And the configurations of the defects that these labels label are exactly such that Poincaré duals of triangulations of manifolds can be labeled. So Poincaré dual of a triangulation of a manifold is a stratification. And in principle, I could have this stratification and evaluate it with my defect DQFT, but I need to add some labels. So labels are exactly what I called candidate orbifold datum. So here are examples, incidentally, of Poincaré duals of triangulations in two dimensions. So I have this A3, this should have been A2, which would label two-dimensional regions. I have a line labeled I1, one-dimensional. I also have two points for the two configurations, depending on orientations, that label these points. And similarly, example in 3D, I would have, again, A3 to label one region, A2 to label one plane. I would have this trivalent line with three planes adjacent to it, labeled by A1 inside this orbifold datum. And then I have two configurations of those butterflies, which are exactly the Poincaré duals of a 3 simplex. Right, so if I can label and I have the defect DQFT, I can evaluate, but now I want this evaluation to be independent on triangulation I choose. So this is a well-known recipe for something like a state sum model, right? You choose triangulation and ensure that something is independent on triangulation. So this was candidate orbifold datum, and an actual orbifold datum is a candidate, which are labels, such that if I encapsulate some piece of stratification in a ball, and that piece of stratification is dual to triangulation of the ball, I can change inside that ball to any other triangulation. So locally, I can change triangulations. So basically, this condition enforces me the independence of triangulation. So colloquially, this could be just said that I can perform the Pachner moves which relate triangulations, or dual Pachner moves, because I work with dual triangulations away from the boundary. At this point, no. The candidate is just labels, but candidate will never appear in what follows. So an orbifold datum with this condition is what will appear. Good. So then here is a small proposition. If I have this orbifold datum, what I can do is I can take a Bordism, and I can triangulate it and evaluate it. and I will get some linear map. This linear map will depend in principle on the triangulation, but only at the boundary, because in the interior, because of this orbifold datedness, I can change the triangulation. So it's I have this linear map. And the proposition is exactly that it only depends on the boundary triangulations and not what happens in the interior. So this map, this evaluation, I drew this very nice picture of how it would look like in 3 dimensions. So a very good description, like a nice to say, is that I take a bordism or a manifold and I fill it with a defect foam. This, I think, this happens a lot in the literature. And just saying this word, filling with a defect foam, can immediately remind one of the idea of the condensation monad by Gaiotto and Johnson-Freid. And this is not a coincidence, so as I said, this thing, orbifold datum, can have other names, and a condensation monad is a really good one. Good. So now, having that, it's a very short leap to define an actual TQFD. So I already have something, I already have actually manifold invariance as a TQFD of this kind should yield, right? So if a bordism doesn't have a boundary, I can change orientations, I get something independent on triangulation, that's an actual invariant. So I only need to define the state spaces so that this nasty dependence on triangulation at the boundary doesn't matter. And what I do is I just take all these maps with all possible triangulations and take the coordinates. And then the actual TQFD is defined just by composing various maps, the ones that go from come from the structure of the colimit and the ones that are, I think, implied by universal property. Handiest sort of applied way to compute this space would be just to take one of those maps and compute its image. And this is how the state space of this, what is, I will call from now on, a generalized orbifold TQFD. This is how it is defined. So generalized orbifold TQFD or just orbifold TQFD. Right, so this, I think, so this is again idea that I assume has been in the literature for some time, but so the place where I've learned this is an article by Karkvel, Runkel, and Schaumann. Good. Any questions at this point?
This colimit is typically could be very badly infinite. Can you compute it in a finite amount of?
Infinite in what way?
I mean, I think that this is a colimit over an infinite diagram generically.
Yes. But so in this case, at least you can just compute it as an image of one of those maps, and then it's just works. So you take one of them and then yeah. So you can compute this in the end. Actually, I think I will show an example of how.
Yeah. It's just like. You take a sufficiently fine subdivision or something.
Yeah. So triangulation, so just take your manifold that you want to assign state space to, take the cylinder of it, fill it with foam, but just fixed foam, actually, as long as it satisfies this condition that is, well, sufficiently fine, then you just take this image. So, of course, one could then say, how do I interpolate between two choices of triangulations, but then I can just choose a triangulation that's the foam that intermediates the two, and then I get this map, and this is exactly how it works. Good. So now let's talk a little bit about what will be referred to as trivial defect TQFDs. And so, ironically, they will be somewhat non-trivial, because it's not a TQFD, it's defect TQFD. Either way, but what is a trivial TQFD? Well, it's just a regular, not at this point, not yet defect. It's a regular TQFD, which is as trivial as you would think. So what you would do is you would assign to every n-1 dimensional manifold a state space that is one-dimensional, So it's already going to be an invertible theory, but also an invertible theory of the most boring kind, because every boredism just gets mapped to identity, so to number, which is one. So all invariants are one, all state spaces are one-dimensional, nothing interesting going on there. And now one could think about, okay, in this, even in this trivial theory, can also call it vacuum, by the way, so it's like a fancy word for that. So what are the defects in the vacuum? Well, it's sort of an appealing slogan that what a defect is exactly a d-dimensional defect is exactly a TQFT, but of lower dimension. So a d-dimensional defect in between trivial theories is just a d-dimensional TQFT, and this sort of is intuitive. Nothing happens, it doesn't have any information on how defect is embedded, because the underlying theory is trivial, it's just the TQFT itself. So now, based on this idea, sort of, we can define the trivial, or we can attempt at defining a trivial n-dimensional defect TQFT as having only one bulk theory. So there is one label for the highest dimensional defects, which is the one that yields the trivial theory. But all the lower dimensional defects will be obtained as generalized orbifolds themselves of a lower dimensional defect TQFT, following this slogan. So to cut the story a little bit shorter, so the defects that I allow in my trivial defect TQFT are the state sum models. So as we will see, the orbifolds of the trivial theory are exactly those that we know as state sum models. So, but state sum models can be quite complicated, and therefore I write, so because of this, actually it should be two, not one, though because of two, the trivial defect TQFT will be ironically quite non-trivial. So I will sort of give you examples of this trivial, of these trivial defect TQFTs. But before that, I just want to flash a very nice idea how you can start building them, and this is, I think, is mentioned or to some extent explained in the recent paper by Niels and Lucas. So the idea is, at least, what is the defect datum? What is exactly the defect datum of these trivial TQFTs? Well, I will build them by dimension. I will start by the trivial one-dimensional TQFT, so it doesn't get more trivial than that, one-dimensional TQFTs. And just by definition, I say, what is the defect datum? Well, it's exactly the one that I get from the one category in this way that I explained just before, and that one category is that of finite dimensional vector spaces. If you want to be a little bit fancier, you could also say in any other symmetric monoidal one category. This in principle would always work, but I want my TQFTs to be valued in vect, so vect. Okay, so now I want to build a defect datum for two-dimensional TQFTs, and this is going to be achieved also by constructing some higher categories. In this case, they will have to be two categories, because from two categories I get the defect data for two-dimensional TQFTs. So first of all, I have this intermediate one, which is just delooping of the first one. This is a monoidal category, so delooping just means a two category with one object, so it's basically the same datum as one category. And what one category? The one, the previous one. Now, the very non-trivial step is the completion of this category, and this completion is exactly in the one in from the talk by Fiona Burnell from yesterday. So taking algebras by modules and so on. Actually, these algebras will have to have certain adjectives for this to work, so they will have to be symmetric separable Frobenius algebras. I will also need to employ this annoying Euler completion for this to work, but long story short, I crank this sort of handle and I obtain a two category of symmetric separable Frobenius, those are the adjectives, algebras, bimodules and bimodule maps, and so on. So this is a two category, and this yields me a defect datum. This is my defect datum. Now, nice thing is that this two category is itself monoidal, so it can also be deloop. So it's now a tree category with one object, so I can get a defect datum for three categories and repeat whatever the analog of this is for that, and I will get a more interesting three category, and so on and so on. In principle, this can be continued generating higher and higher categories. There are, of course, complications in that, but I have then the defect datum. The question is how to obtain the actual TQFD, but that's also possible, and this is the content of what follows. So this is rough idea of I think a very neat idea, which maybe is somewhat involved, but maybe before continuing, are there any questions?
So just to make sure, the defect datum for at level k, let's say, just deleting the one before.
The looping and completion.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So at level 3, for example, you would write B of C or orb.
Yes, exactly. I might have missed some of the orbs, but exactly. Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. So as promised, examples. So trivial one-dimensional defect TQFD obtained from the one category of vector spaces. Well, this is an example of a stratified bordism, one bordism. How do I get a TQFD? I just evaluate this diagram as I would evaluate diagrams for categories. And this is a linear map. It works perfectly fine. So trivial one-dimensional defect TQFD. This is the trivial two-dimensional defect TQFD. So delooped, so these are all vector spaces, right? But now I sort of draw them on a surface of the two bordism. Two bordism is a surface. What is the evaluation procedure? I forget the topology and do the same thing. So this is exactly how evaluation works. One could ask, well, how do I ensure that everything is then sort of isotopy invariant? Well, because of the symmetric monoidal, blah, blah, blah. This all works. Okay, so now I need to orbifold complete it. And orbifold completion means that I need to develop this new theory where the bulk theories will be obtained from this generalized orbifold TQFD. So I need one in this two-dimensional TQFD. So there is only one label A2, and from now on, whenever it's trivial, I will stop writing the top, layer here. But I need the label for lines, so a vector space, and also maps like that, such that dual Pachner moves hold such that this can be performed. These are the dual Pachner moves in two dimensions. What is the evaluation then? Well, if I have the surface, I triangulate it, take the Poincaré dual, label everything with these data. I get some sort of a graph and evaluate it as before. Just forget the topology, but what I leave is this graph, which sort of resembles the topology of this surface. And I evaluate. Of course, there is a complication due to state spaces, which I'm not mentioning, but that's how it works. Okay, so an example of those are, as I mentioned briefly before, if you have a symmetric delta separable Frobenius algebra. So that means symmetric and delta separable, and this means Frobenius. So I can actually construct such a defect datum. So among the bulk theories are, for example, the ones defined like this. I think they are called the Fukuma-Hosono-Kawai models. So state sum two-dimensional models. Okay, how do I add now defects inside that theory? Well, I employ this idea that I have these Pachner moves from before, and I simply color them, and this gives me the datum that, or the conditions on what a defect should satisfy. So for a line defect, I will have to have, first of all, vector space, and then, well, colored vertex like that, and then from one side, from another side, and some conditions, and so on. For the point defect, I also have some conditions that are implied in a similar way, which basically implies that this vertex should be able to slide over it. So nothing more, nothing less. And evaluation is just as before. where now I have these new vertices, which are labeled by these new lines. I added C here, this point, which I think I wanted to say that, oh, I can also Euler complete it, as I said before. So this point is for that. But you might also ignore that and just get the DQFT as before. So if you want an explicit data for example, Frobenius algebras, so a bimodule for Frobenius algebras is exactly a defect line defect datum like this. I don't know if I mentioned this or not. Okay, so now on to three dimensions. Same thing, right? So I can have products of algebras. That's why this category of algebras is monoidal. And if I have a stratified three-boardism, like the one from before that I already had, well, the evaluation procedure is just as before. Convert everything into these graphs and use all the special vertices that these labels for defects already carry. And I get then a giant graph labeled by vector spaces and linear maps. I forget the topology and evaluate the graph. This is how trivial 3D defect DQFT works. Any questions on that? If not, then one can then start looking at orbifold data in this trivial 3D defect DQFT. So what do I need? I said I won't mention this, but here I am mentioning this again. I need a label for three strata, which is there only one of them. I need a plane, so for example, a Frobenius algebra. I need this trivalent line, which is now, if read for Frobenius algebras, it would be a certain bimodule. What bimodule? Well, there will be actions for every plane that is adjacent to the line. So if this is my A2, an algebra, so this would be an A2 from one side, an A2 and A2 from the other side, bimodule with three A2 actions. And I also have those point defects, which are just some sort of bimodule maps. And this is basically my candidate defect datum. I would need to ensure now that this datum satisfies those or is invariant under these dual Packner moves. There is a slight simplification that one usually does in dimension 3, which is laid out, I think, in one of those articles. So I think that this whole idea was worked out in one of the articles by Karakvili, Runkel, Schaumann, and the idea were why these special orbifold data, what's nice about them. So we, together with Karakvili, Runkel, Schaumann, and Schell, we wrote a paper on that. But the point being that instead of using these dual Packner moves, you can also use slightly stronger moves, but which are then slightly easier to use. We are called BLT moves. BLT stands for bubble, balloon, and triangle. right. What is the evaluation procedure? Well, I take some boardism, I fill it with this three-dimensional foam, right? And I get this, for example, this nice picture. But then I go on and evaluate this as I showed you in the previous slides. And I get, in the end, a giant, giant graph, which I just evaluate. And because of all these conditions, it then works nicely. So I haven't given any examples of this particular kind of orbifold datum yet. And I will give one example in a bit. But before that, remember how we introduced the line defects for the 2D models, which was the idea of taking these dual Packner moves and coloring them a little bit so that you get conditions and also see the data that you need. Same idea actually works here, and this was carried out by in this recent paper by Karakvil and Müller. And they yield domain walls which are between different three-dimensional TQFTs, and these were addressed already in number of works. So there is the paper by Fuchs-Schweigert Valentino that was addressed, I think, in both of the talks from today. So in a slightly different setting, not in state sum models and trivial defect TQFTs, but instead for Reshetichin-Turayev TQFTs, We also, together with Koppen, Runkel, and Schweigert, wrote a paper on how you can implement them in one way there. So there is also this very nice paper by Katrin Moisburger, which implements this for exactly the Turaev Viro in TQFTs, and so on. So and so the paper by Kerkwil and Müller, so it sort of encapsulates this in this slightly more general framework. Either way, the evaluation is like that. So I have now these two phases, two different TQFTs. Both are coming from these three-dimensional orbifold data. But what you do is you fill foam inside those regions and get some picture like that. And then you proceed to convert everything to ribbon graph. The conditions that come from this dual Pachner moves procedure exactly ensure that everything is independent on these choices. So this is, I think, what was in the paper referred to as orbifold completion of this by category of algebras and so on. Okay, so one now has this full defect state sum TQFT, very complicated thing, and let's do it even more complicated. We can also try to deloop that thing and get something four-dimensional. So this is really the limit where one can go. So what you are supposed to get is something like a four-category, and these, I say, are beyond my competence. But at least it's a delooping of something, so you can still work with them. So if you try to do that, in the end you would get pictures like that. So you could get like three-dimensional worlds meeting at a two-dimensional plane and so on, and imagine a four-manifold knitted out of these things. So it's like a messy picture, but also beautiful at some point. So this is in the end. So the good thing about this is that it is obtained sort of procedurally, so there is a method to this madness. Okay, so this is what I wanted to say about the not yet the state sum model, but about this trivial defect TQFTs idea. Maybe there are questions.
How long did it take to make all the pictures?
Don't ask that. Yeah, it's too depressing of an answer. Good. So now I promise you examples of the 3D ones, for example. And the idea is that there is an orbifold datum, three-dimensional one, in this trivial three-dimensional theory, which produces you a TQFT, as all orbifold data do. But that TQFT is the Turaev-Viro of Barrett-Westbury. So how does that work? The input for Turaev-Viro-Barrett-Westbury TQFT is a spherical fusion category, so semi-simple category with monoidal product and a trace. I will not review this notion a lot, but I'm hoping that this is sort of a familiar notion. But at least, some things that are there in this category are objects, and in particular, there are simple objects. So imagine like simple representations of, say, Hopf algebra. There is the tensor product notion in that category, and there is also associator, so a morphism which encodes me this coherence of the order of the tensor product. And this data I can convert into something I can use as orbifold data for these other constructions. So let's start with objects, or at least with simple objects. I can collect all simple objects into an algebra, which also happens to be a Frobenius algebra. What is that algebra? I just take endomorphisms for each simple object. Well, actually, that's just the field, so boring algebra. But it also has a very canonical Frobenius structure, which comes from the fact that there is a trace on endomorphisms, which this fusion category brings in. Okay, so this is the thing that I said can be used to label such a plane. Okay, tensor product. Well, tensor product gives me this tri-module. So what is that? I would just take all these home spaces between all possible combinations of simple objects there. And this is at least a vector space, so that's good. But there, it's also a tri-module because I can just precompose, postcompose with the endomorphisms here. So I have exactly a suitable label for such a line. Now also, I also have the associator. And this associator basically gives me, in a similar procedure, like taking the home space with some object on, it gives me a linear map, which if I tweak a little bit, it becomes precisely the suitable label for such a point. And if you work out the details, which are not maybe the easiest details to work out, but you can do this, you get that this linear map has matrix elements coming from the 6J symbols of the category, which are exactly like the minimal data needed to encode the associator. So these are the numbers that you can collect into a solution to pentagon. There are also those Euler completion factors, which you have to have here, which in principle, when trying to coming up with this example, we can just guess. In this case, they also come from things like dimensions and global dimension of the category. And then there is this theorem, which, I mean, as the definition is sort of very suggestive already, that this is an orbifold datum first, and if you take the associated orbifold TQFT, you get an isomorphic TQFT to that of Turayev, Viro, Barrett, Westbury. So the long story short here is that you have this categorical data, and you sort of have this sort of not a procedure at this point, but you have a way to convert them into various vector spaces, algebras, which talk to each other in a right way. So this is all in 3D. So if you really wanted, you could continue in 3D to also include the domain walls and everything. And if you looked at the right side of the table on the last slide, there is a nice way to describe what's going on there. So there is the equivalence of two categories, one being the category of semisimple categories with trace, also called Calabi-Yau categories, linear functors and natural transformations. You can map this data to exactly the bi-category of symmetric separable Frobenius algebras, bi-modules, and bi-module maps. And this map is exactly, you take, for example, category. So to get an algebra, you do exactly what was there. And so this is able to convert something into the datum that I need, for example, a spherical fusion category and its functor, which is the tensor product, which is why I get some sort of a bimodule here, and a natural transformation, which gives me some sort of bimodule map, because that's what this equivalence does. So if now one would need to proceed in four dimensions, one could guess something very similar. And indeed, you don't really need to guess that much. So you have there now, instead of one category, you have the world of two categories, semi-simple two categories, in fact. And I will, again, not talk about again what they are. But just as you can convert the semi-simple one categories into algebras, bimodules, and whatnot, you can also convert a semi-simple two category into just one categories, or multi-fusion one categories, bi-module categories, and so on. So this is one of the earlier works of Thibault Decoupé, who has done a lot of work on semi-simple and fusion two categories. And once you are in this domain where you have one categories and whatnot, you can convert everything into Frobenius algebras and so on, just as described before. So this first bit, of course, works only for the ones without trace, so unoriented version. But you don't need to know all the details to have a very good guess to work with. So if you do that, so what do you get is, well, for a 4D TQFT, those Douglas-Reuter TQFTs that I unfortunately don't have time to describe in detail, you need an input which is a spherical pre-fusion 2 category. And among the things that it has, there are also things called simple objects, just like one category. But now their end things like n s I. Previously, this was a vector space. Now it's going to be a category, and moreover, monoidal category, moreover, a spherical fusion category because of all these adjectives. And if I take those and sum them up, well, this is a data that I can already stuck in this construction due to Niels and Lucas. And I have then an orbifold datum which labels three-dimensional strata in my would-be orbifold datum for the four-dimensional state sum TQFT. Okay, so this is sort of a picture, like a three-dimensional thing. Right. Anyway, then you have also tensor product in this category. So, in as before, we only need to consider tensor products between simple objects in principle, and I can do something very similar and get some this kind of thing, which in this case is again a category, and similarly, like before, we got a tri module. We now get a triple sort of multi. Module category, and this is an actual thing. I think it's defined in works of Gregor Schaumann. Either way, what this is then it's a module category, so it labels some sort of a domain wall between three-dimensional theories, and now these three-dimensional theories meet in this way in this weird picture that I showed you. Right, so you should think of this as a sort of you have this three-dimensional worlds meeting at the plane just like before, and this is the bimodule category labeling it, or rather, if I would convert this to all the state sum data by this procedure, I would get exactly what I need to proceed to evaluate this. Good. So just like before, I have the associator, but this time they are one morphisms. And just as before, I can evaluate them. I can construct some sort of a maps between homes. But in this case, this is going to be a functor between module categories. And so it will give me a datum for a line where a lot of these three-dimensional worlds meet, six of them, and also four of the lines, so which are protrudes to these planes. And then I have this extra layer, the pentagonator, which is needed for the monoidal structure of A2 category, and from that I get these two nasty points, which I would need to complete this candidate orbifold datum. So the procedure is again similar, but even more messy as it was for one categories. Long story short, I get a linear map that is obtained from 10 J symbols now, which encode this pentagonator simply similar to as 6 J symbols encoded the associator. Then there are also Euler completion factors that, yes. Okay, so the punchline or one of the punchlines of the talk is then the theorem that we work on or we have but need to write up is that this all datum that I've just listed is an orbifold datum in this four-dimensional trivial theory which we took pains to construct. And moreover, they yield invariants, at least on closed manifolds, which are exactly those given by the Douglas and Reuter. So this is the theorem. So one thing that is nice is that it gives us immediately a TQFT, and they define only manifold invariants, even though they were totally capable of defining also a TQFT. One thing I should say is that this is not a rediscovery of these invariants because, well, you need to prove things, especially for this statement. You need to prove the invariance under the 4D Packner moves, and we don't do that. We just copy them from the Douglas-Reuter paper, and so this is sort of repackaging of this information in this very systematic way of treating state sum models. So, so I still have a little bit of time, and I have a little bit of material, but this was sort of the punchline of the talk, so maybe at this point there are questions. Yes?
The Kreen-Yetter state sum, is that one like the top two levels of trivial?
Ah, yes. Yes, I actually will mention that, but Krein-Yetter theory is an example of Orbifold, of this Douglas-Roeter theory, so it's an example of Orbifold. It's the spherical fusion 2 category, or this is actually where pre-fusion matters, is the delooping of a braided fusion category or a modular fusion category. If you take that, run this, and what you get is Krein-Yetter theory. Yeah. Good. So there are so there are then some things that at least these all of Orbifold TQFTs immediately bring. So for example, they bring the ability to look at the boundaries and the boundaries. So this was there was this question about how do I see boundaries in defect TQFTs? So I'll repeat what I think was the answer. So in this kind of defect TQFT, you obtain boundary as a domain wall to the trivial theory. So then when you, for example, evaluate the state space of the lower dimensional manifold, it is as if you are evaluating the state space of the manifold with boundary, even though that manifold in principle in this framework should continue on. But since it's labeled here by trivial theory, you just don't see that. So this is how you implement the domain walls in this setting. And for Orbifold data, you can always do this. You can always have a very canonical domain wall where you just end this Orbifoldedness, end the form. So this is what a thing that you can define, and you can analyze it for the Orbifold TQFTs in all dimensions, in particular in dimension 4 for Douglas-Roeter theory. And exactly specializing for this delooping of a modular fusion category, so a two category with one object, and where only one morphisms matter, and they are exactly objects in this modular fusion category, one can prove this statement that usually is stated as a slogan that Reshetich and Turayev TQFTs are boundary theories. This is something a lot of people say. And this is definitely not a very new thing. For example, the latest work on that, or one of the latest work that I know, is by a former student of Kirillov, if I'm not mistaken, Ying Hong Tam, who's now a postdoc in Hamburg. So he wrote his whole thesis in showing aspects of this slogan. But this sort of also gives a very systematic way to see, to state what that means. So that means basically that Reshetich and Turayev is a co-dimension one defect between two theories, four dimensional ones, one of which is Douglas-Roeter for this input, the other is trivial. And to get the precise statement is that you look at defect TQFT, where you just take this Douglas-Roeter construction and include defects of this kind. You just look at the subcategory where you have exactly one domain wall for all objects and one morphisms, or connected objects and connected one morphisms. And then you have a functor into three-dimensional bordisms with some tweak, which is just giving the sort of bounding manifold and taking the Lagrangian and the signature from that. And then this is exactly the source category of Reshetich and Turayev, which brings you to vector spaces. And the other one is just you can evaluate this thing. And the statement is that this diagram of functors commutes and produces isomorphism of such TQFTs. So this is one implication, domain walls, in particular, these kinds of domain walls. Another implication that is still a work in progress is how to look at state spaces. This is something nice. So this is, again, very instructive to look at dimension 3 first. So recall that when I defined all this nasty Orbifold datum for the Turayev, Viro, Barrett, Westbury models, so there was this one vector space, which was just the direct sum of these HOMs. Alternatively, I can look at it as a string net space living on a disk where the boundary pawns sort of are not allowed to move. So I am allowed to smear and compose q-pawns inside this disk, but the boundary pawns are always fixed. Now, when I am computing this state space, as I said, that I need to compute the image of such a map, right? I take my surface in three dimensions as a surface and take a cylinder of it, fill it with foam, evaluate, compute the image. So what is the image of that? Well, if you look very closely at how this map is defined, there is a graph, which is the dual triangulation on the boundary, and it's sort of, there is the cylinder of this graph, and there are also these horizontal bits, horizontal defects. This is basically how you can always arrange this cylinder. And from each one of them, for each one of these defects, you get an image for this edges of this graph when you compute them as some relative products of algebras or things. You get edge projectors. They will be projectors, right? And then for the every face, you get sort of face projectors. So this is how you would proceed when computing just step by step. You would start with some vector space, which is bunch of those lines, bunch of those things. So this is, for example, an element in that vector space. And there's a bunch of these disks just floating independently in this skein or string net disk. Then when you apply impose this condition that there is a surface defect or line defect at the boundary connecting them, you sort of apply the projector which connects those string nets. This is exactly, so this is in the definition of how this works, but if you work out the details, this is exactly what you get. So you end up with this sort of thickened graph inside of which these string nets live. So they have a little bit of more freedom to move, and therefore the state space also becomes a little bit smaller. It's not yet the state space of the TQFT. The state space of the TQFT is obtained when I apply also projectors due to these horizontal defects. And what they do is simply they remove all the regions here, and what I get is exactly what was called the string net soup. I really like this name. So what you get is the string net soup, which is, as we know, the state sum for the state space for the Turan-Affiero-Barrett-Westbury models. And in this setting, this is how you get it. So of course, that this is the Turan-Affiero-Barrett-Westbury state space. This is, I think, proven by Kirillov some time ago. But in this context, this is how it looks like, and I think it's a nice picture. And what's even nicer is that now one can at least speculate how this would look in one dimension up. So imagine all this, but in higher dimensions. Actually, no need to imagine. Here it is. You start similarly. Now you start with already a three-manifold. Before it was a surface, now it's a three-manifold, for example, three torus. You will need to fill it with sort of foam and then apply projectors for edges and faces and also volumes in this setting. Each of those vector spaces assigned to some points will be the vector space as similar to that previous Hom space. So if I just go back quickly, this was like the string net space for the disk. And this is sort of higher dimensional analog of that. So now I have this Krag calculus where planes are labeled by objects, lines are labeled by one morphisms, points are labeled by two morphisms in my fusion two category. And there is a whole vector space of these configurations. I would actually need to also sum over all these labels. Either way, an element here is exactly in this sort of big state, the space that I start with, is exactly a bunch of such, they're just product of such vector spaces. Now, when I apply the edge projectors, they start connecting, just like in the previous example, I started connecting those disks. So I now start connecting those bubbles, imposing sort of similar relations. And then I continue on. If I now apply the face projectors, I sort of get a network of surfaces and everything, but they will have holes in between, so those surfaces won't have the freedom to move like completely free. And so I have something like a picture like this. So there are all these planes and whatnot intersecting. Points are always labeled by two morphisms and so on. But there are these holes here which sort of prevent them from moving and fusing as they like. And then I have the last thing, the volume projectors, which just brings me to a picture like that. So if the state space of for the Turan-Affiero-Barrett-Westbury was called string net soup, you get a picture like that, lasagna. So I actually am not sure. So there are people that use this word in similar contexts. I think they are related. So this is a work of, I think, Paul Wedrich and Katharina Strope, which I think they used it, but I'm not sure about the context. Either way, so you get the lasagna of diagrams in this higher category. Now, what I told you here is not quite precise, not even closely, because even defining such a lasagna space, well, at least from the mathematical point of view, there are problems. But what we did work out is that this works very nicely for Kreyn-Yetter case when you don't have the labels for the planes because you only have one object there. It's a delooping. And what you get is just the skein space for the three manifold of that modular fusion category. So there is that. And now I'm at the very end, and it's very good I have the very last slide. And there is the last implication that you also can get the lattice models by employing those edge phase volume and in higher dimensions even further projectors. So if you can just take all those projectors individually and sort of write down the Hamiltonian, which is the sum of those projectors, or maybe one minus those projectors, and what you'll get will be a commuting projector Hamiltonian. And in three dimensions, you will soon discover that these are exactly the Levin-Wen models. Well, exactly up to some details, but they will be lattice models that will have the ground state space being Turaya-Firo-Barrett-Westbury. And now you can also do this for this more general setting, for the for higher dimensional setting, for Douglas-Roita theories. So in particular, if you take the delooping of a, say, modular category here, you get what is, I think, in the literature called Walker-Wong models. So these are like three-dimensional phases and so on. I'm not sure what you get here for arbitrary spherical pre-fusion 2 category, so question marks. Also, the next to the last comment, that this is all being done from the definition of orbifold TQFT. All these projectors and so on, they are obtained from the definition of the orbifold TQFT, and it actually matters little that it's exactly this trivial defect TQFT that I use to construct my orbifolds. I can use this for any defect TQFTs. Of course, there are not that many, but there is at least one that I really like, which is the three-dimensional Reshetichin-Turayev defect TQFT, so with surface and line defects, as introduced by Karquil, Runkel, Schaumann. And so if you can look at orbifold data in those theories, and I did this a lot, what you get is then what we, in a recent paper with Ingo Runkel and Thomas Voss, we call them internal Levin-Wen models. So they are sort of non-local models out of anions in some phase and so on. And now the last point, I already mentioned the condensation monads by Gaiotto and Johnson Freid. And this needs to be sort of emphasized, that if you read that paper and you look at this construction, you realize that they are basically the same thing. So these are special cases of condensation monads. Well, not maybe as they were exactly introduced there, they are oriented versions thereof, but that's what they are. And condensation monad is something like a separable algebra in a higher category, and that higher category is exactly the one you get from the defect TQFT when you start. So this is then the end of my talk. I'm 2 minutes over, sorry. So.
Questions. Yes. From the boundary of the 4D theory, do you get something like fracton models?
I don't know.
So, because you had this picture where the particles or these bubbles can only move in one direction, right?
So you can definitely look at something like, excitations of the models, which also have boundary. But how to interpret or what's their nature, and whether you call them, we could call them fractons, I am not qualified enough to answer. What you could, in principle, get is sort of like a also Reshetichin-Turayev TQFT with line defects and even surface defects at the boundary, and then they protrude to something in the bulk. I'm not sure if that's what you would call fracton particle, but...
I don't know what is kind of the definition of fracton particle.
Me neither.
But I just thought one could look maybe at some works in the literature where the data is quite clear and
right.
Simple, maybe something related to finite groups or whatever.
Right, this should be really looked into. It's just that at this point I think it is outside the scope of what we are doing, but I mean this would be a very natural next I think question.
To look at. Maybe we can talk animal. One other thing that you get fractons do not are not associated with topological field theory because they care about geometry, and so I think to get that from a construction like this, you need to remove some of the higher dimensional data.
Yes.
But I think it's probably in there.
So, if I were doing an oriented thing, I mean, one of the things that can happen when you allow orientations is you start worrying about Euler characteristic corrections that you have to put on spheres and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the type of, does that show up in this?
Right, so I think so the orientations here are basically encoded, I think, I said always invariants under Pachner moves, but what kind of Pachner moves do we use? We use for those for oriented triangulations, meaning triangulations with total order. So that means that I have a very large list of those Pachner moves which are independent, and they all have to hold. Otherwise, I don't call what I have an orbifold datum. So this is where orientationness comes about. And this is also where these special kinds where I have these BLT moves help, because there you have then less of those conditions to check. But the orientations come about from the oriented triangulation, say.
So the type of question I have, I think the sort of minimal example that I have in mind is that if you take just a separable algebra to make a surface,
yeah,
and ask that surface to be able to rotate, to be oriented, like not depend on a framing,
right,
you have to choose a Frobenius structure, which is an extra scalar width of choice. And
yes.
I'm wondering if that like affects the results.
It does, and this is again the same kind of answer. So in two dimensions, I would look at the 2-2-1-3 moves and all oriented versions thereof, so where all kinds of orientations of lines come about. And in principle, this datum that I called orbifold datum, maybe it might not be a Frobenius algebra, but it would need to satisfy a lot of conditions for what would one call a coproduct and the product. If I have the Frobenius algebra, just the Frobenius algebra, that's not good enough to produce me an example of that. I need a symmetric Frobenius algebra, and symmetric is exactly the word that I think takes care of bending and those things. So if I scroll back to the definition of what symmetric Frobenius algebra is, in case maybe somebody else needs or myself. Yeah, so this is the definition of what symmetric means, and basically this is basically the...
If I was doing some larger condensation and I had some surface, and you and I sort of started agreeing on what our orbifold data was, but I put a slightly different symmetric Frobenius structure, could I have broken somewhere else in the coherence?
So
like there's some scalar in this choice.
Yes,
I was
yes,
wondering if those scalars might like
those scalars are not
sort of have to solve some equations.
Those scalars are not responsible for the bending. So the scalars that it is true that I can just scale the co-unit, then the co-product would scale. So this would basically just add what I call the Euler factor there. It would so symmetric and separable up to this. This is enough for oriented ones, but indeed if I scale, I just pick up this Euler factor. I'm actually not sure what happens, say, in dimension 3. I don't think that I can just sort of start tweaking data like the pivotal structure of the spherical fusion category in some way so that these Euler factors would change. So there seems to be a little bit more rigidity, but in this case, these are not responsible, I think, for the orientedness. Only the symmetric part here is what orientedness is influenced by.
If there are no further questions, let's thank the speaker again.